Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Hey, Mona. I know the EB5 projects are the key driver and really the key differentiator of EB5 as opposed to other visas. And I know we've talked about it a lot on this show before. Do you think we should continue to keep covering the wide array of EB5 projects?
Yes, Mark. We have discussed direct projects and regional center projects and entrepreneur projects. There are three types of projects in EB5. But I can't emphasize enough how much more we need to discuss this, because it seems that everybody has a different take. And just like we've had a lot of regional centers on this program, and all the regional centers have different ideas as to the capital stack and how things should be and basically where the projects are and what you should look for in a project, so is the same with direct pooled. What we are seeing is that there are more and more direct pooled projects coming onto the market. People are looking for smaller projects that they can fill quickly. And I feel like we do need to discuss this area a little more. There's a lot still to be fleshed out.
That's right, Mona. And that's why today we have Kelly Fries on this episode. Kelly is the founder and CEO of International Growth Capital, LLC, and an international business consulting firm. She and her husband, John, also run the EB5 Hollywood Regional Center. That sounds glamorous. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on.
Kelly, it's great to have you on. And I've really enjoyed whenever we've discussed is your different perspective to everything. So we would like to pick your brain a little on this podcast and talk to you a little bit today about direct pooled projects, not so much about regional center projects.
Sounds great.
Kelly, how much experience have you had in this area?
I've been working in direct EB5 for over 13 years. I started off helping out private investors, making small going concern businesses, helping them with expansion via direct payroll jobs. And so that evolved into my involvement with larger companies that were looking to expand and create jobs, as well as the regional center program.
Well, I actually do like direct pooled jobs a lot, direct pooled projects. I have my own reasons, but I feel in many ways the size and the structure actually favors investors.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think there is a great deal of transparency that organically evolves out of a direct pooled project.
Exactly.
When you really have the owner of the company showing the payroll receipts from ADP or their preferred payroll provider, and you have all of those things showing through the accounting and cash flow reports, you really get a different level of looking at the business and seeing how everything transpires and how it's made. So some people are much more comfortable with that versus the, you know, indirect space. So we really like that they can see, touch, and feel all those numbers. And also that the NCE, the new commercial enterprise, is oftentimes the same as the JCE, the job creating entity.
Right. Well, what that actually means for our listeners is that if an investor comes in and invests within a direct pooled, they are part of the same entity which holds the assets and that has the actual money set out to create the jobs. It's more like your real EB5, so to speak.
Right. And I like the way Kelly Fries has put it. You really get the feeling, as she says, the touch and feel of the project, whereas a large regional center, you're in a different entity. You may not feel everything, but it sounds like there's a direct line of sight in, well, these direct pooled projects.
Well, Mark, we're seeing, as I said earlier, we're seeing a lot more of these now. One of the reasons are practicality, because the investor pool has shrunk a little bit without having China in there. I feel that a lot of investors are more comfortable in a smaller project, which can easily be filled up.
Right.
Kelly, you've got a lot of experience in bringing in investors. How are you noticing the investors' attitude towards direct pooled? Do you have to educate them more?
We do have to educate them on which jobs count and how, you know, how those pertain to what's turned into the United States government. Specifically, that means that there's no economist report. So once we get over those educational hurdles, again, the fact that the project could be smaller and more compact, it brings about another added benefit that if a pooled project is only $10 million per se, that's only 20 people. So instead of investors number 1 through 5 being really concerned that the project might not get completed or that investor 50 through 100 might not file for years later, this really eliminates a lot of different variables and a lot of fear factors that have been raising in the marketplace, especially with the limited investor pool that you're speaking of. You wouldn't want to go into a project thinking that, oh, I'm going to file and then the project's going to be completed in a year if it's not. So we really like that added protection.
No, that's right. And we had David Herson on the show some time back, and he also emphasized that he does like direct projects. One of the main reasons is that it's easier to add on a job, which you can't do with an economic report and a regional center sort of setup. As long as we are very focused as to whether or not the position has been created. But if the position has been created, we can add the jobs.
Right, that's correct. And I love working with David. I've worked with him for many years.
Well, you've been in the industry for quite some time as well, and you're out on the West Coast with David. Are you on the West Coast right now?
I'm actually on the East Coast for a couple of weeks, and then I'll go back when school starts.
So Kelly, looking at your resume here, now you have 20 years of experience in international business consulting. And as you mentioned earlier at the top of the show, you have 13 years experience doing these direct pooled projects. You know, I'm also looking at this and it seems like you've got a recent focus on companies that strive for essentially what you're calling rapid growth and job creation. But, you know, when I think of EB-5 projects, I think of big real estate projects, and I don't always think of those as rapid growth and job creation. So tell us a little bit about how you're able to achieve that focus. Are there certain industries you're looking at or certain industries you are not looking at?
Well, thank you, Mark. That's a very good clarification. We did and we still do the larger real estate projects, but what we found, especially in the economy and trying to help businesses get on their feet, is those type of projects really left a need for what we would call smaller entrepreneurial companies that were, say, you know, going concerns of $5 million plus. They really could use some extra help where they could get some money that's a little bit more favorable than a bank, a little bit less onerous terms than, say, mezzanine capital or other expansion capital. And they really could use a little bit of support. Sometimes that support comes in the form of friendly advice and capital from a foreigner. So we developed a proprietary methodology whereby we could market our projects in direct spaces where the foreign countries have a special need for those type of projects. What that means is we found a direct need for manufacturing, for restaurant franchises, and for some other boutique businesses, and we made a direct correlation to where those industries were popular overseas.
So, Mark, this is the big thing here. EB-5 is not just about real estate. I know the real estate, I've often discussed this, real estate hijacks EB-5, mm-hmm. but you know that I'm a big fan of manufacturing and non-real estate projects. The last direct pool project, which we actually featured on the show, was a transportation project. Again, it's a project with a high job growth area. And I think that's the similarity of a lot of the projects that Kelly is seeing, which work well with direct pooled. There's plenty of jobs there, which the politicians should love. I hope they're listening. But Kelly, one of the problems that we have faced with manufacturing is the fact that an investor cannot see his return in the same way he perhaps could see his return with a big building, the construction of a building, and the refinance or the sale of that building.
Actually, Mona, if you apply basic real estate principles to a manufacturing facility, you can achieve those milestones or even better. So what we like to do is we take a typical return that we'll see in the marketplace for an EB-5 regional center. We then double that return and we see if the company can meet or exceed those expectations in a timely fashion. And once they can meet that threshold, we consider taking on the project and building a model around where we will have a similar exit, just like a real estate project.
Well, Kelly, I like the idea and the concept of a manufacturing type project, because obviously we're so accustomed to real estate. You build something and once it's built, once it's completed, it has a price, a value, a market value higher than all the money that went into to create it. when we talked to a direct pool before, as Mona mentioned, it was in the transportation sector. So it was essentially a service where people were providing a service for pay. And obviously those people were jobs and they got paid to do that job. But, you know, the idea and the concept of a manufacturing project sounds great to me because you're taking people, it's direct jobs, they're actually working, they're creating something, maybe not a huge resort or a big high-rise hotel, but something smaller that could be sold then. It could be sold 6 months from then or a year from then. It can go into inventory. You know, there can be adjustments for market prices. So those jobs in the area of transportation, if somebody's performing a service, but no one's consuming that service right then and there, that's a lost opportunity. But in manufacturing, you can play with inventory and production rates. Anyway, I'll stop there because obviously you know a lot more about this than I do. So tell us a little bit about these manufacturing type projects. Am I on the right path here or am I completely off base?
Mark, you're catching on faster than anyone. I think you're really getting to the heart of some of these key subjects that are at hand. And what I really like is that you're thinking down the path of actually creating something that's more of a commodity or an asset. So with that being said, I'd like to tell you that the things I'm concerned about in a business are the balance sheet and enterprise value. The balance sheet correlates directly to the assets. So that's your collateral. That's what's going to be give you the foundation where you know your EB-5 jobs will be safe and the investor's investment is safe. The enterprise value is very significant because that's how they're going to achieve their exit. So you can look at that. And if you have a going concern business that's creating enterprise value, creating something of value, they can actually sell that for a multiple, which is similar how you see in the real estate business.
Right.
So you really can drive that return and drive that into something that's more valuable at the end. We really like to look at things where 2 + 2 = 8. You know, we like things that are where the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And you can really see that when you have inventory. I'm a huge, huge fan of inventory. We like to have inventory in the factory to make the goods. We like to have inventory of different parts that assemble together, make our products. And we like to have inventory of product that's going out to the door to our customers. Those are all assets that end up on the balance sheet, and those give you a safe, real business that you can make your own assessment and say, hey, we're doing a great job here. We have assets, we're creating jobs, and we have a very high probability that we will be able to sell or exit this company at some point.
Kelly, that's a great point, but there are two points from that. Number one, I think it's very important that our listeners and anybody who was thinking of investing should be realistic. You do not have a good balance sheet, so to speak, initially. It does take 2 to 3 to 4 years for any business to have the numbers that you really want to see. But that is also the case for real estate. And the second part, point that I really want to bring out is that what we have been finding over the years, and we have a lot of experience in real estate projects, is the inflation of the budget for construction. When your budget for construction is overinflated, the jobs are just not there. And it can lead to all kinds of issues and problems later.
Well, that's a good point.
But you agree, though, right, Kelly, that it does take time for a business to start showing those figures. You're not going to get, especially if you're using EB-5, you're not necessarily going to get the balance sheet you want to see straight up.
Of course, it takes years and years. But actually having a goal that you can put on the wall and giving your team that goal is something that's attainable, something that is important for the company, you know, for milestones and for morale. Whereas if we were just providing a service, if people were just providing a service on any given entity, then they wouldn't necessarily be able to add up items towards inventory at any point in time.
If I may interject, it may sound that on the balance sheet, when you're looking at your assets and your liabilities, sure, you're coming up with a lot of liabilities up front because you have materials, you have processes, you have things you have to invest in. Mona, that sounds just like a large real estate project as well. It takes time to build a large resort or a tall hotel. And that same thing holds true. Before people start using it, before they can turn around and sell it, you got to put a lot into it. Another thing I kind of Oh, I sound like I'm already a fan of Kelly Freeze, and I've just got to know her on this episode. Something else I like about this is real estate is tied to that estate, to that location, where, you know, manufacturing, depending on what you're actually constructing, could probably, you know, transport around different locations or even across international borders, so other people could enjoy that. Where a real estate project, you have to come to that location to enjoy it. So that way, it's a little bit more flexible. But I'm going to stop because I'm putting words in Kelly's mouth.
Kelly, why don't you give us an example? It's always easier for our audience when we are talking about a topic, if you actually come to a physical example. Give us an example of a project, a manufacturing project that you do like.
The project that we really like is called Coast OEM. And Coast OEM provides all the sanitary porcelain to make toilet bowls, showers, the tile, basically the U.S. competitor for Kohler, delivering to big box retailers, names that you would know like Home Depot and Lowe's. They focus on water saving devices, basically anything to do with saving water, getting water from point A to point B inside of a building. That's what they focus on. They have several patents for different materials and different items that they make in the factory.
So how does that fit in with all of the aspects that we've discussed that you like to see, the good balance sheet, the job creation, all of the above?
So this project has turned out to be really great, and we've had the fortune of knowing them for a little while now. They do own the real estate, so it gives it that really sturdy foundation of what's going on that land. Any capital improvements are assets of the company, so we really like that. We also like that any improvements of the facility, they're not just tenant improvements in a rented facility going to somebody else. They're part of this facility that increases the value of the project overall. So that's all very strong. We also like the way they take in inventory. As I was saying, that inventory then builds different parts for different customers. So there's progress in the goods along the way, and then those goods can be sold. So where, you know, we've had regional center projects before where you're just holding your breath until the leasing office can start leasing apartments. If things go well on manufacturing type of projects, we'll actually see orders being delivered in advance of where we would see any kind of activity on a real estate project.
Mark, didn't I say that we did need to keep on fleshing this subject out? Because every time you hear a different speaker or a different type of project, we learn something new.
Right. And I love this example of Coast, because then we can begin to explore, you know, what Kelly was talking about as far as the enterprise value, what kind of multiples to expect. Now, obviously, I don't want to ask specifically what a multiple would be for this project, because I assume it's confidential. And honestly, I think point estimates are for suckers. I like ranges. You know, are we looking at multiples of 18 months or 36 months revenue type thing for enterprise valuations for these manufacturing type projects? So, Kelly, I'm just going to turn around to you and ask you that question. What's a good multiple range for enterprise value?
18 to 36 months is pretty applicable here based on the improvements they have to make in the factory, the increased product line that they have to output to the big box retailers. You know, there are milestones that they have to achieve in the marketplace as well as internally in the factory. They are also implementing proprietary computer technology and other things that will optimize the factory that also creates technical jobs. So you're kind of checking a lot of boxes as you go. You're checking off marketing, people, you know, working on the manufacturing line, and then all the computer support systems to optimize and make that more valuable. So you really are creating multiple jobs. And what I love about factories is that they can have multiple shifts. So when you have that early when you have that early crew come in at 5 a.m. and you know they're going to leave in early afternoon, and you have the afternoon crew and or the executive offices up front, you just see all these moving bodies and you just feel blessed.
Kelly, the other interesting part, though, is, do you find, like we do, that you have a very different type of investor who goes towards projects like this, more of an intelligent investor? Because there really is not the same kind of glamour in toilet parts as there is in some big real estate.
Yes, we have found some very interesting things with this project. We did learn that the people drawn to this project had potentially some manufacturing or widget making expertise of their own. So sometimes they're even offering us their, you know, their two cents of how they do it in their homeland. And yeah. then sometimes people are asking if they could make a large order for their real estate or an affiliated company that they work with. So that's interesting to see how that is evolving in real time. What we really also like, and we learn in the market as we go, is that this has turned into more of a communication about water saving devices, water safety, what it means to have patents on those different types of devices. So this company is more about everything to do with water in the building versus just toilet bowls. Because when we first went out, one of the gentlemen that we worked with, he said, Kelly, I love this project. I love Robert, who's the founder. He said, but I can't get over the fact that I'm talking about toilets.
I don't care what Mona says. I think toilets are glamorous.
Kelly, the other interesting part about this whole doing a pool direct or doing any direct is that looking at it backwards, we have used and we can use these type of projects for E2 programs. And I know that you already mentioned that you look at restaurants and franchises for E2s. And Mark, I know you have mentioned that you think of restaurants every time you think of an E2. But believe it or not, E2 can be anything. And these type of projects, even a manufacturing project like this, can be a great E2 project, which would segue into an EB5.
Yes, yeah, so we're seeing a lot of candidates that want to test the waters in the United States, if you will, yeah. where they're looking to pull together their capital. They're looking to maybe lease or buy a home here for themselves or for their children. What they're looking to do is to maybe, I call it their own personal infrastructure. They're trying to get their sea legs about them as to how they drive, conduct their banking, what type of work or investments they would make in the United States before they make that larger commitment to EB5. So we see E2 as a very good segue to that.
Yeah, I don't feel it though. It's going to be so prevalent at the $500,000 range, but once the investment amount does go up, and we are expecting it to go up sometime next year, and if a person has to invest $1 million or so, I think you're going to see a lot more interest in E2. E2s, and especially for projects like this. What kind of projects are you seeing on the market for E2, Kelly?
Right now, we represent two different types of medical clinics. We represent a restaurant, and we also represent animal pet care license franchise opportunity. So we have different products in different industries. Usually, the person will choose based on what they have experience with and or where they or their spouse would prefer to work.
It's my understanding that E2 visa, the E2 applicant, the E2 visa holder has to own 50% or more of the enterprise, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So it sounds like in that case, obviously, they're somewhat tapped out as far as what they can buy into because they're the majority owner. So it sounds like these, you know, pet care restaurant may work for them. But as far as leveraging the economies of scale of these larger direct pool projects for EB5, they may not be able to get that. Am I correct?
Well, you can do multiples. That's the whole point of what we're trying to do right now.
Well, Mona, walk us through that. What does it mean?
So, Mark, yes, this is actually a new area. I would like to use the word turnkey, but yes, you are leveraging your art and you are, do have one entity, but now start imagining multiple entities, 20, 30, 40, 50 E2 entities of that particular type of franchise. It's not unusual. Think about how many Subways there are in the country or how many other food franchises, and move away from franchises and think of other types of service sectors and businesses. Multiply those out. It's really the same model. It's just educating USCIS a little bit, making sure we check all the boxes as far as E2s are concerned. And giving a turnkey approach would usually mean, or I would say most of the times would definitely mean having a management element. What we have to do is be careful that this management element doesn't overstep what an E2 investor is supposed to do.
Right. And honestly, that sounds like the case for almost any franchise. Don't get into a franchise that's going to overstep. But I see what you're saying. It makes sense where a large EB5 project or a regional center, in this case, direct pool, is at one location building up, or as Kelly was saying, a manufacturing facility that is really growing in its facility. But with a franchise model, instead of growing up, they're growing out and spreading out. And each individual E2 visa holder is essentially the captain of their own ship in that location where they happen to be at.
Well, that's what the similarity is between that and the direct EB-5, because they're captains of their own ship in that one as well. The only difference really, well, there's not one difference, there's several differences, but the job creation is a major difference.
Okay.
Kelly, are you seeing an increase in interest for people who want to do EB-5 eventually, but wanting to start on an E-2? And of course, they're only able to do E-2 from certain countries.
Yes, we're seeing a dramatic increase in the level of E-2 interest because, as we spoke about, it's a stepping stone or segue to EB-5. But also what we're finding that the E-2 has a more concrete point of entry and that people can actually facilitate and memorialize a relationship with a company and an expansion model before they would be able to gather all their documents and do everything that's required for EB-5. So the fact that E-2 is a little more flexible on what I would call an onboarding perspective.
Yeah,
we're seeing that people can get engaged. They can get to know U.S. business owners. They can get to know the team of people that would do their paperwork for their application processing and build a rapport and a trust there. And we're finding that to actually be a very positive and organic methodology, whether or not they decide to do EB-5 in the future.
That's right. And it's interesting as well that a lot of people are coming in from the countries they're not supposed to come in from, like China and India, but obtaining a Caribbean passport, which is a topic we've discussed before on our show.
That's a whole nother conversation, correct?
Well, it certainly sounds like there is a lot of potential with manufacturing projects and even some of these E2 projects through a franchise model, which may even grow into an EB-5. Who knows? Well, Kelly Fries, founder CEO of International Growth Capital, the EB-5 Hollywood Regional Center, and also investment facilitator of Glamorous Toilets. Thank you so much for coming on EB-5 Investment Voice.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us today on EB-5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB-5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.